Hi, everybody. My name is Doug Rowell, and I am a grateful alcoholic. I have a home group, which is the Winner's Attitude Adjustment Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet every day at 7 a.m. in the First Presbyterian Church of North Hollywood in North Hollywood, California. If you're ever in North Hollywood, we're there at 7 a.m. every morning. And I have a sobriety date. Sobriety date is June 7th, 1987. And that was not my first sobriety date. If it pleases God, it will be my last. And I have a sponsor, as Bill mentioned. My sponsor is Dick Martin, the Foxhall Group of Bellevue, Nebraska. And there are people who do workshops on our 12 traditions of applying them to relationships, applying them to marriages, applying them to raising children, applying them to business. I don't. I happen to think that the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous are uniquely qualified to keep Alcoholics Anonymous in line. And frankly, and I've heard very good presentations of how to apply the 12 traditions in business. Frankly, if I had a business where you had to be an alcoholic for me to do business with you, I'd be afraid of that. And if I had a business, and I have had businesses that were self-supporting for through their own contributions, and frankly, they didn't last long. But I think that these 12 traditions are remarkable. They're astounding. When you get down to the application of them, and so what I try to do is give practical applications that I've seen the 12 traditions practiced in our fellowship. And by the way, if anybody has any questions of something that I'm saying right when I'm saying it, raise your hand. And I got lights on my glasses, so I might see if you wave. I'll probably see you, and I'll be happy to answer a question. I'll be happy to field the question and repeat it for the tape. And I want to make it, the thing I want to do the most is make it clear that I am not an authority on the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm somebody who is just absolutely enthralled with them. I love the traditions. It amazes me that they were ever started. I believe that the steps, our 12 steps, came from the mind of God to the hand of Bill Wilson and were handed down. But the 12 traditions, Bill Wilson said, were hammered out on the anvil of experience. And they were based on mistakes that we made in our first 15 years of existence, and people drank and died over these mistakes, and made us go, wonder what we could do about that. So they came up, Bill came up actually with these traditions. And first I want to tell you how I got interested in them. I think most people in Alcoholics Anonymous have just a kind of a vague appreciation of our 12 traditions, and it's I tend to blame whoever coined the phrase the 12 traditions are to the group what the 12 steps are to the individual, because self-centered alcoholics as we are, I think our tendency is to go, okay, well then I'll do the steps, that's about me, and you guys take care of the traditions, that's about the group. In the first tradition, it says, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on the unity, the preservation of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way I first got interested, when I got sober, I kind of alluded to it. By the way, Bill talked about me being dancing naked in Cincinnati. I did. I danced naked in Atlanta for 8 weeks. It was in a big 8,000 seat auditorium. It was just wonderful. I love being a professional stripper. It was it was a great job. But I'm not going to talk about that tonight. It had absolutely nothing to do with the traditions. But I'll mention it tomorrow night. Let's see. I could probably find. As a matter of fact, I will bring up an example of where it does cross over the traditions. When I was newly sober, I had fooled around with this thing a long time, and I really wanted to you know, dive in. I want to get my nails into this thing. And I had a sponsor who was very active in hospitals and institutions, and he got me into doing commitments and sweeping floors and making coffee and all this stuff and going to hospital and institutional panels. But he said we had a once a month business meeting in my home group, the San Fernando group at that time. And I said, when is that? Is that business meeting on the second Tuesday? And he said, I don't want you going to the business meeting. And I said, oh yeah, but I want to. It's my home group. I want to get involved. He said, give it 6 months. We'll give it 6 months, and then you. And he did. I think he didn't want me to see what goes on among the people that I held in high esteem in Alcoholics Anonymous at each other's throats. But what happened was, I got sober in June, and around October, he said, you still want to go to a business meeting? I said, yeah. So I went to the business meeting, and I'm just fascinated with all the structure that's going on and people complaining about somebody not cleaning the coffee pots and the chairs aren't set up and nobody swept the floor at the last meeting and all this stuff. And somebody said, Madam Chairman, are we going to have the New Year's Alcathon? Now, San Fernando Group had a New Year's Alcathon. I think they just celebrated their 45th annual New Year's Alcathon, where they invite people from other groups around the Los Angeles area to come and put on a meeting, and they have meetings all night long and all day long, and other groups put them on, and then they have a dance on New Year's, and it's really so that people who are sober and Alcoholics Anonymous can come and on New Year's Eve and have a safe place to come and not drink, and I knew about the Alcathon, but I'd never attended one. And somebody said, are we going to have our New Year's Alcathon? And they said, oh, yeah, we better start planning that. It's October. And so then they started allocating the different little jobs, and I'm fascinated with this. And said, who will, you know, contact the other groups, and what about food, and who wants to do decorations? And so I'll do decorations, somebody said. One of the longtime members said, Madam Chairman, are we going to have that manger this year? And there was kind of a went going across the room, and I, what does manger mean in AA talk, you know? And somebody said, yeah, of course we are. That's part of the holiday decorations. And somebody else said, it's not holiday decorations. It's a specific church. It's a specific religious ornament, and I move that we don't have it this year. Somebody else said, I second. And somebody else said, oh my God, all the original members were Christian. And I realized they're actually talking about a manger, a creche. What I didn't know was every year they have this argument. They called it the Christians and the Lions. San Fernando Group had this argument every year. Sometimes they had the manger, sometimes they didn't, depending on how the vote went. But they started arguing, and I didn't understand. I was kind of following what was going on. It's a religious symbol. All the original AA members were Christians, but this isn't a Christian organization. It's a spiritual activity. It's not a religious deal. And what about the Jews? Somebody said, you know, well, it's an American holiday decoration. It's like a Christmas tree. No, we can have a Christmas tree, but not that damn manger. And they said, it's a violation of the sixth tradition. And they're sixth tradition. And I'm going, six. I'm hearing the traditions read at every meeting, and I have no idea what they're talking about. Somebody else said, no, that's not a violation of the sixth tradition. It's not an affiliation with an outside entity. And somebody else said, it's a violation of the tenth tradition. We don't have any opinion on outside issues. This is clearly an outside. So it's not a violation of the sixth or the tenth. Somebody else said it absolutely is if you can read the English language. And they're really getting heated. And there was this old guy, Stan, who was just always seemed to cut to the simple, language and said, stood up and said, excuse me. The fourth tradition says we can use the second tradition to violate the sixth and tenth tradition, and the ninth tradition says there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. And then people were going to each other. He says, Dan's right. And somebody says, he is not. That's the loosest translation of the... And I had no idea, but the thing is, I had no idea what they were talking about. And I made up my mind that night I'm going to study these traditions so next time an argument comes up when people are throwing around numbers of traditions, I'll know what they're talking about. So I started looking at the traditions, and they're fascinating. Sometimes you'll see clocks that have the steps. They'll have, you know, humility and honesty and integrity and surrender and things instead of numbers representing the different steps. And there are one-word explanations or one-word for the traditions. Number one is unity. Number two is authority. Number three is membership. Number four is autonomy. Five is purpose. Six is affiliation. Seven is support. Eight is professionalism. Nine is organization. 10 is opinion. 11 is anonymity. And 12 is humility. And you can remember these by a simple word. I don't know if you ever had that. When I was in civics in school, they had this word Saint Dapiacal. It doesn't exactly apply now because it was to remember the positions in the cabinet of the president, and it was Saint Dapiac was Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Defense, Attorney General, and so forth, all down. And Saint Dapiac would help you remember that. So I have this word Uamapaspua. it's hard to remember the word, but if you remember the word, it may or may not help you remember those other words. But Bill Wilson called our 12 traditions the unenforceable suggestions for AA traditions, and he said, I love that, the unenforceable suggestions of AA traditions. He knew that he had no intention of making these rules that people would get thrown out of AA for. In fact, part of the reason to have our traditions is so people won't get thrown out of AA. The basic idea of these traditions is to preserve Alcoholics Anonymous. It's to help Alcoholics Anonymous live so people can get sober. People who aren't born yet will be able to get sober because Alcoholics Anonymous will be here for them when they get here, when they need it. And some of them are intended to help us to get along with the outside world, and some of them are designed for us to keep from killing each other and from getting involved in outside issues and outside affiliations. Bill Wilson said, in the years that lie ahead, Alcoholics Anonymous faces a supreme test, the great ordeal of its own prosperity and success. He was such a visionary. I think it will prove the greatest trial of all. Can we but weather that, our own prosperity and success? The waves of time and circumstances may beat upon us in vain. And so these traditions, tradition number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal AA, personal recovery depends upon AA unity. And in the long form, it says AA must continue to live or most of us will surely die. And hence our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows closely after. And this is an obvious one, and there's a reason for it to be the first one, because it's setting up, however you interpret the rest of the traditions, Alcoholics Anonymous must survive for the individual to be able to get sober. There are a few examples that I can give you. One is the one that I mentioned refers to me naked in Cincinnati and Atlanta, is that my first couple of years of sobriety, I used to go to a 7 a.m. meeting at this place called Unit A. And Unit A was geographically located between studios and Skid Row, movie studios and Skid Row. So our membership was partly people who lived in the dumpsters behind the meeting place, and also actors and directors and writers and prop people who would come, worked in the studios, who would come there for a morning meeting. So it was an interesting collection of people. And there was a guy there named Larry who was not quite right. I'm not even sure I'm pretty sure he was an alcoholic, but I don't know that he ever intended to get sober. But he would come in. He was a colorful guy, and he sang opera, and he was actually pretty good. But even though we appreciated what a good singer he was, we didn't really appreciate him bursting into song during someone's share. And it was a one-hour meeting, you know. And Larry, if you want to sing, wait until after the Lord's Prayer, and then you sing all you want. And but one day, Larry, I don't know if he got off his meds or what, but he came out of he went in the bathroom, took off his clothes, and he came out and he started singing. And people, oh my God, Larry's naked and singing. And he got up on stood up on a table and he's singing. with everything hanging out, and you know, it was pretty offensive, and people were trying to stop and get off. He'd kick them and stuff, and so some woman ran out to the payphone and called the police, and they were trying to get Larry off of the, you know, and he would fight. Nobody wanted to hurt him or anything, but it was a big deal, went on and interrupted the meeting, and the police came and they arrested him, and there was a discussion about whether the police should have been called to take some alcoholic out of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the old timers said he was disrupting the meeting. Our common welfare comes first. Whatever steps we have to take to maintain this meeting, it's important that we maintain it. And if nothing else happened, not only did Larry might have got the help that he needed, but a couple of local cops now know where people can come to stay sober. And I was at a meeting one time. There was a guy that used to come in with, he trained seeing eye dogs, and it was at a church, the meeting that's my home group now, and he would come in with these seeing eye dogs, and the church had asked us not to have dogs and not to have pets in the rooms. So I asked him not to do it, and he said, well, this is a seeing eye dog. And I said, yeah, well, you're not blind. I mean, and everybody's going, oh, shut up, Doug, and, you know, everybody's against me, but they took a group conscience and decided it was okay for him to bring a seeing eye dog in there. I wanted to check with the church to make sure that we didn't lose our meeting venue because this guy was bringing a dog in, and the church said, don't be a moron. Of course he can bring a seeing eye dog in. So it was an example of like people started calling me, Dr. Doug. Dr. Doug, he's the traditions cop around here. And that's, you know, it's kind of a mixed blessing having that, that reputation. This is a really interesting, example. There was a meeting that I used to go to that started at 8:30 on Thursday night. There was an hour and a half meeting, 8:30 to 10, and this was when Hill Street Blues was on TV, and everybody hated to miss. They would go to the Lord's Prayer, boom, they'd be out of there. Nobody wanted to clean up commitment, and some people left the meeting early because everybody wanted to get home and see Hill Street Blues. And we knew it, and we talked about it. It never came up during the sharing or anything. But one day, somebody said, I'd like to make a motion that we change them, our meeting time. Instead of from 8:30 to 10, we make it 8 to 9:30. And somebody said, yeah, well, let's do that. And so we took a vote, and everybody voted to change the meeting time. Nobody said anything about Hill Street Blues. We knew what it was about. And it voted to change the meeting time to 8 p.m. Now, but there was one person there, I think, who was the meeting's GSR, who knew a little bit about the concepts of AA. And there's the minority opinion. And she said, Carlos, why did you and Peter vote against it? And he said, oh, well, you know, we work over here at Kmart, and we get off at 8 o'clock, so we'd miss the beginning of the meeting. But whatever, we'd just come in a little late and miss, you know, the reading of Chapter 5 or something. And somebody suggested maybe we could change the meeting instead of 8 o'clock to 8:15. And then everybody could make it on time, and it would end at 9:45, and you had 15 minutes to get home and see Dan Travolta. Travanti. So they did that. And that was the first time that I had ever seen the majority opinion demonstrated. And it was also for the betterment of the group, for the entire group, which brings us to tradition two. For our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They don't govern. That's the short version of the second tradition. I know there's some people in this room who probably know that the long version of the second tradition is 10 words shorter than the short version. I like that. It just amuses me. You know, when they first put the traditions together, Bill had the long versions, and I don't know if they shortened them down so people could read them at meetings or why, but they needed a short version of these, and they kind of tended to ramble on. And so I think what they did was, and people will say sometimes, you know, outsiders will look at this and go, do you know that your second tradition is longer in the short form than it is in the long form? Yeah, we like it that way. Why is that? Well, when we took the long version of the traditions and shortened them all down, we got down. The ninth tradition is actually fairly complicated. It's all about not being organized and not being grandly organized, but smallly organized, and just having secretaries. And it's really kind of complicated. But we wanted to keep it. Had this part in about our leaders are but trusted servants; they don't govern. We wanted to keep that in, but. Here was the second tradition, and it was so short already in its long form, so we just stuck it in there, and it almost fits. And I think that'll keep non-alcoholics from thinking about becoming alcoholics. You know, two things I didn't believe in when I got to AA were God and democracy. I considered God an opium for the masses, and my opinion about democracy was the majority is always wrong on every subject. and that was my unbending opinion of democracy and God. And so here's a group of people practicing democracy. Any decision they have to make, they'll take a vote. And not only do they vote, but God is speaking through that vote. I thought, I don't think this is going to work for me, you know, but the longer I stayed around, and as somebody pointed out to me, it's not actually a democracy. What it is it's an anarchy of a democracy, of a dictatorship run by a higher power that you don't have to believe in. And, okay, I can dig that. And there's a disclaimer word in the second tradition, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. we may take a group conscience that God is going, no, I object. Okay, it's passed. And so it's possible that God doesn't express himself in the group conscience, but it seems to me that it always works out that way. I've been in a... when they used to have smoking meetings, there are no smoking meetings in California now. I don't know how there is in Atlanta. But when they used to have smoking meetings, I was at a non-smoking meeting one time, and people wanted to smoke. And they took a vote. And I thought, you can't do that. There are people who come in with asthma. And I was a smoker. But, you know, it just didn't seem right that you could just take a vote and change it to for one day to a smoking meeting. And they took a vote, and it passed almost unanimously. And I looked around, and everybody in the meeting was a smoker, and it was only for one day. So, you know, maybe God's hand was in that. I don't know. It seems to work out that way. There's a rumbling in the ranks of Alcoholics Anonymous to change the wording of the second tradition to a loving God as he may express himself in an informed group conscience. And every once in a while this comes up and people start acting like it'll be a good idea, but it'll never pass because the wheels of GSO turn very, very slowly, and the decisions they come up with eventually are very wise decisions. And clearly, if the tradition were changed to as God may express himself, loving God as he may express himself in an informed group conscience, somebody would have to decide who's informed and who's not. And I think somebody who was really quite informed might be able to exclude everyone but himself. I don't know. I can see that happening. Tradition 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's the short form. And in the long form, it says our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Anyone who wants to call themselves an alcoholic or an alcoholic member, meeting can do so. It's interesting because the qualifications, if you want to get technical, are different from long form to short form. In the short form, a desire to stop drinking is the only requirement, and anyone who's sober for a while, I don't have a desire to stop drinking. I certainly have a desire to stay stopped, but technically I don't qualify under the short form. And under the long form, I don't actually suffer from alcoholism either, but my mother does, and she doesn't even drink. You know, she suffers from my alcoholism, and So, but I mean, I think maybe sometime they'll change the wording to anybody who says they're an alcoholic, maybe a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's clearly what the intent is. In the 12 and 12, it talks about a guy in Akron. I don't think it says Akron, but it was Akron in 1937. A guy that came into the meeting and he suffered, quote, another addiction even worse stigmatized than alcoholism. It was he was a morphine user, but he was also, which that doesn't mention in some of our other literature, this is Akron, Ohio in 1937, a group of paranoid white guys had this meeting trying to stay sober, and here comes this guy who is described as an ex-convict, a morphine addict, a black man wearing pancake makeup and bleach blonde hair. And, you know, and like, there's people like this in my home group, but in North Hollywood, I mean, that's just, you know, you'd be surprised if there wasn't. But in Akron, Ohio, in 1937, this was something that the members were particularly concerned might stigmatize the group. I suspect that any one of them, if you polled them, would have said, oh yeah, let the guy be a member, but they didn't want to damage the reputation of their fledgling group, and called somebody, probably Dr. Bob, if not Dr. Bob, some other old timer, and told them about this guy and said, you know, he wants to join up, and whoever the old timer was that they talked to said, well, did you say that the guy is an alcoholic? They said, oh yeah, he said he's definitely an alcoholic. And the answer was, what would the master do? And I think this is the kind of answer that we pass down in Alcoholics Anonymous. What would the master do? You know, we make courageous decisions, courageous for the time. But in 1990, I was at, some of you probably were also in Seattle for the International Convention in 1990. And I went to there was a meeting of about 400 or 500 people probably, and there's a lot of meetings of people leading from different countries. And this woman from South Africa, a white woman from South Africa, was talking, and she started out by saying, I know that a lot of you have been reading in your paper. This is 1990, this is during apartheid. And she said, I know you've been reading in your papers words like apartheid and Mandela and Botha and Tutu and necklacing, and I want you to know that in South Africa the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And it was silent for a second, and then people started to applaud, and then everybody started to applaud, and then they were standing, and they gave her about a 3-minute standing ovation. Not because that's the rules everywhere. You know, anyone who wants to be a member, anyone who suffers from alcoholism, anyone who has a desire to stop drinking can be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But in South Africa at that time, it was against the law for whites, blacks, and coloreds to congregate together. Against the law. The state law. And anyone who did that was subject to arrest. And sometimes in South Africa, if you were arrested, you might not ever be seen again. But that's the deal. This is AA. We help each other get sober, and it has doesn't matter if you're white, black, colored, or anything else that, you know, that they say your political affiliations or whatever. And it was a true act of courage at that time in South Africa. And it's changed since then. Of course, the political situation has changed. Moving on to Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. This tradition pretty much says that every group can run their meeting the way they want to. There's a meeting in my area. It's not going any longer, but there was a guy who felt sorry for some of the people who had slipped in and out, and he knew they were embarrassed to come to meetings where there were people who had been sober for a long time. So he started a slippers meeting. I know, it sounds kind of like faded, doesn't it? And it was. But along with having, just to prove to these guys, these slippers, that he meant business and they shouldn't be embarrassed, he had a fifth of Jack Daniels sitting on the desk where the leader was. And it cracked the seal on it. You know, if anybody wanted a drink, come and get a drink. And people were saying, I don't think you should do that, you know. It doesn't seem like a good idea. And so somebody wrote to New York, and New York sent him back a letter and said, you are, of course, at liberty, and this is what they usually say, you are, of course, at liberty to handle the situation in any way that you like. But the majority of AA experience has suggested that open liquor bottles at meetings are a kind of a dangerous thing. So, and the group did eventually become defunct. But the fact is, they could run the meeting any way they want. I've been to meetings across I-40 in Arizona and New Mexico and Texas that say have signs on the wall in the clubhouses. We don't care how you do it in California. And I wasn't tempted when I walked in to change their meeting, but after seeing their signs, I thought, maybe I'll make a little suggestion, but they could, you know, people can run their meetings any way they want. The only example I know of one group doing anything to affect another group is our intergroup meeting. We were about to in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles. It represents about 350 meetings, and we were about to lose our meeting venue, and they were looking around different places. Some woman said, my church is very friendly to AA. Let me check with them. And so they said, church said, yeah, once a month on a Monday evening, that'll be fine. 7:30. Yeah, we have a room you can use. And we got a letter. I was on the board at Central Office, and we got a letter from another group, a small group that met, on Monday nights at 8 o'clock. And they said, if you meet at this room at 7:30 once a month on Mondays, you will take up all the parking in the parking lot. Many of our attenders are, and our meeting starts a half an hour later, many of our attendees are elderly people, and they won't not park. They won't park down the street and walk. They'll stop coming. And so we didn't meet there. But that's the only example I've ever seen of how one group might have a negative effect on another group. You know, it says each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. As an example, I started going to a big, great meeting in L.A. Because I had a sponsor that went there. And when I first started going there, I noticed that in the preamble they left out the part that says, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses any or opposes any causes. First time I heard that, I thought, and I was 5 years sober when I started going there, so I was used to hearing the preamble, and the first time I heard it, I thought, oh, the guy skipped a line. And the next week I heard the same thing. And the next week the same thing. 3 weeks in a row they left out that part, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. I thought, I got to see, it couldn't be a coincidence that it was left out 3 weeks in a row. So I went up during a coffee break and looked at the format, and it wasn't in there. So I thought, wow, I wonder why that is. So I asked my sponsor, and he said, I don't know, I'll look into it. And I never heard back from him. And then I asked somebody else in the group, and she said, I didn't know it was like that. Are you sure? And I said, yeah. She said, I'll look into it and get back to you. And I never heard from her. So one night I asked the guy who started the group, and he said, are you sure that's missing? And I said, oh, yeah, yeah. I even looked at the format. He said, I didn't know it was missing. I'll look into it, and I'll get back to you. And I never heard from him. I called the secretary at home. What's up with this thing? He said, it's not missing. I said, oh, no, it's missing. He said, well, I have the format in my car. I'll go look at it and call you back. So he never called me back. So, and my sponsor said, hey, Doug, this preamble thing, give it a rest, okay? Just forget about it, okay? Okay. So I didn't say anything until about 8 months later they elected a new secretary, and it was somebody that I knew pretty well. She was pretty bright, and so I asked her if she knew about it. She said, I didn't know. And I said, yeah, I don't know why it's missing. She said, I'll look into that. I'll get back to you. So she did. The next week she said, come here. Here's the deal. She said, this group was founded, and the guy who started the group wrote down the whole format of the meeting and put in all the stuff by memory. And he just forgot that part of the preamble. And it stayed that way all this time. And so many times we tell the story of how the format was first written down, and we say it hasn't changed one word in all that time. And so if we correct that part of the preamble, we won't be able to say that. Okay, I get it. I don't have to approve of anything. All I have to do is I go to the meeting or not go to the meeting. But the fact is that the fourth tradition says they can run their meeting however they want. They can do the conference-approved preamble, or they can make up their own preamble, as long as they don't violate some other tradition. So that's really all the fourth tradition says. You know, you can run your meeting however you want. Tradition 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. That's our primary purpose. And sometimes I'll hear people say, I don't want to hear anybody talking about drugs in an AA meeting, because our primary purpose is to carry the message, and the message isn't about drugs. I think the message is about our stories. The message is about, actually, our message isn't don't drink. A friend of mine from Canada, really good speaker, who never did any drugs, and she said one time from the podium that if you mention illegal drugs from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're in violation of the fifth tradition. And I was taken aback when she said that. And I talked to her afterwards, and I said, you know, you talk about your children. People talk about their driving. You know, people. She said, I only talk about my children as they were affected by my alcoholism. I said, well, I only talk about drugs as they were affected by my alcoholism. And they were severely affected by my alcoholism. But the fact is, our message is not don't drink. The message is, an alcoholic can come here, take our 12 steps, and begin to move from a self-center to a God center, where you can learn to live happily and comfortably without drinking. And that's a far cry from don't drink. Sometimes I mention drugs, but I only mention them, as I said, as they were affected by my alcoholism. And if I had known, you know, I didn't know when I was doing it. Somebody said, here, man, try this, you know, and I was like, I should have said, oh, I'd love to, but I'm going to be speaking at an AA meeting in 30 years, you know. I don't want to piss anybody off, you know. I don't want to water down our message. I think the biggest violation of the fifth tradition is when Alcoholics Anonymous members, regardless of how long they've been sober, short time or long time, give medical advice without benefit of medical license. You know, we're often, and I must say, with people that I sponsor, I try to get them to talk to people with a medical license, and I think I personally think alcohol. I'm not speaking for Alcoholics Anonymous. I personally think that a lot of medications are overprescribed by psychiatrists, but I don't have the medical education to back that up. So I try to find people, but so often we'll tell people, don't take those medications. Just try the steps, and I generally agree with that philosophy. But we may be killing some people. In fact, we are. And psychiatrists used to be very friendly to Alcoholics Anonymous, and as a group, they've kind of stopped being as of late, because people have been advised by members without benefit of medical education to get off their medication. So I think that's a violation of the fifth tradition. That's not our primary purpose, but. Okay, that's a little soapboxy. Tradition 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. There are people that I love in Alcoholics Anonymous who are sure that signing court cards is a violation of the sixth tradition. And when I look at it, honestly, I have to say, yeah, I think it is. If it came down to a vote, I wouldn't vote to stop signing court cards, because some people, some of my best friends in Alcoholics Anonymous are sober today because a judge sent them to Alcoholics Anonymous. But But when we say things like in my home group, we're not affiliated in any way with the courts. But if the judge gave you something to bring to us to sign, we'll be happy to sign it so you can take it back and say you were here. So I think that's a violation of the sixth tradition, and I also think that every group, or virtually every group in the country, breaks or bends our traditions at some level. That may not be true. It's an opinion that I hold. A lot of what I say, it's opinion. That's why I opened it up by saying anybody who has questions, I'm happy to take a question and repeat it. Because this is a workshop. You know, it's not, well, so far it's just been a soliloquy, but, but it's technically a workshop. Bill said, money and property and authority are ego feeders. And I think it's important that we don't give the impression of affiliation. I was asked many years ago, about 15, 16 years ago, by a friend of mine in the program who had a radio show, Sobriety Online, AA Online. I mean, not online, on the air. And would I put together a panel and bring it on his program? It's 11 o'clock at night. A local channel, and I said, hey, I don't know about, you know, traditions, the anonymity and so forth. And he said, no, you don't, you know, you don't use your, they're not going to see your face. You don't use your last name. You come on as an AA member. We talk, we do a meeting, and I don't see what tradition it could be violating. And I said, I think you're right. So I asked a couple of people, and we got a panel of five people to go on the radio show, and we have this little meeting. And actually, it was a pretty good meeting. We read chapter 5, and a couple of people shared, and then we took a break, and we were going to come back. And when we took the break, it turned out the radio show was sponsored by a drunk driving attorney who specialized in getting DUIs removed from your record. And was like, oops, there's a apparent violation, an apparent affiliation with an outside entity. So you don't know where these are coming from. AA medallions. This medallion that I have on, the triangle and the circle, that used to be an official copyrighted trademark of Alcoholics Anonymous. And people were making coins with that on it. And then people started making coins with that on it, some other things added that weren't AA, and people, and there was a movement in GSO to stop that, to halt that. And we started looking at what we could do, and it came down to this. Either we really had three options. One, we could start manufacturing medallions ourselves, medallions and chips, with the triangle and circle on. Then we're getting in the medallion manufacturing business, which is kind of scary place to be. The other one is to just license our trademark to selected manufacturers, and that's a little spooky too, because if somebody isn't licensed and they're making them, we're bound to go after them. We're legally. And that brings up a whole bailiwick of problems. And the third option was to drop the trademark, to give up the copyright on our trademark, our longtime trademark of the triangle and circle. And after hashing it back and forth, that's what they finally did. They did the spiritual answer. What would the master say? You know, and I love that about Alcoholics Anonymous. I kind of hated to see us give up that trademark, but we haven't given it up. I'm still wearing my medallion, and we still get them, you know. And but we don't have to defend anything. Tradition 7: Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Obviously, we can't accept anything for free. We can't accept free rent from a church. We can't accept free government money because we're doing good work. We can't accept any outside. This actually started from Bill Wilson was going to go to that Rockefeller dinner. If someone's new and doesn't know about the Rockefeller dinner, John D. Rockefeller put together a dinner for Bill Wilson and early members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they brought books, and he invited all his rich friends, and they handed out all these books, and they had the dinner, and John D. was sick that night, and he couldn't make it, and he sent Nelson and his son Nelson, and Nelson Rockefeller got up and said, my father thinks this is the greatest organization, and wants you to have these books, and We're not asking for any donations because the one thing that could ruin this organization is outside money. Bill Wilson said he saw dollar bills flying out the window. And that was the beginning of our self-support concept. And you could sort of feel the hand of God in that, because the Rockefeller Foundation was the biggest philanthropic organization going at the time. They would give millions of dollars to anybody, just about. And they actually did give Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson something like $5,000, which we paid back. And the Rockefeller Foundation said AA is the only organization that was ever given money that had actually paid it back. And we need to be self-supporting. When I was on the board of directors at San Fernando Valley Central Office, a guy came in. We got a check for $3,000 from somebody. And we called this attorney and said, what is this? And he said, it's from the estate of a client of mine whose son was sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, and he bequeathed this $3,000 to Valley Central Office. And we said, we can't accept it. He said, oh, no, you have to. It's part of the will. We said, we can't. The guy's not an alcoholic, and even if he was an alcoholic, he couldn't give $3,000 in one shot. And he said, can I come and talk to your board? So he came to the board of directors meeting, and he laid out his case, and he made a lot of sense, but we said, we showed him the traditions, and said, we can't accept it. And he said, okay, well, then tell me, it's your money, tell me what I should do with it. And I was ready to say, well, you know, there's this Oasis Women's Recovery organization that I'm affiliated with, and they could use the money. But before I could, there was a guy there who actually knew the traditions a lot better than me, who said, well, the problem is we have a 10th tradition, too, that says we have no opinion on outside issues. And what happens to this money that we can't accept as an outside issue? So we don't have any opinions on it. And he was impressed with it, and he left. I tried to catch him in the parking lot and tell him about Oasis. But we're self-supporting. And that Tradition 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. We don't do 12-step work for pay. It's just clear cut. It's maybe kind of a no-brainer. My wife works in recovery, and a lot of people that I know work in recovery. But when she gets done with her job, she needs a meeting. You know, this is not 12-step work. This is what she does for a living. People who work in the central office are not getting paid to do 12-step work. They're getting paid to run an office. And generally, the people who run our offices around the country are paid a little bit less than people who run other kinds of offices, just so we can go, well, they're not paid very well, at least, so that's spiritual. But Tradition 9, AA as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. This is when I first started out and said that my friend Stan said the fourth tradition says we can use the second tradition to violate 6 and 10, and the ninth tradition says there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it. Practical extension of Tradition 2, in fact, is that part, our leaders are but trusted servants, they don't govern. We're not organized. We seem to be a national organization, but we're not. We're individual groups of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an individual group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we all have the same book. But we don't have to. Our groups don't have to answer to New York. New York can't cancel somebody's charter because, general service, because they don't like the way they run the meeting. It's a pretty interesting organization. I don't know another organization that's this unorganized and yet so organized that you can have international conventions where 60, 80, 100,000 people attend. And in San Diego in 1995, City of San Diego authorized overtime, a lot of overtime for the police, because they knew that 80,000 alcoholics were coming to San Diego. and from a police point of view, that sounds dangerous. And I guess there were policemen who were members that said, you don't have to worry about this. But they authorized it, and the guys were working overtime. And they're walking around, you know, and everybody's like, they realized that for a convention of 80,000 people, we were, of course, in less trouble than any other organization that size. But we're just not organized. I love that it says in there, Alcoholics Anonymous should never be organized. I used to go to a meeting where they would say, Alcoholics Anonymous as such ought never be organized. And people would go, no problem. And we're barely organized in our own lives, let alone in our groups. Tradition 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. And people come up to me sometimes that know I'm a member of AA and say, what's AA's take on legalizing pot? And I say, we don't have an opinion. Well, I mean, but are they sort of in favor of it? Or are they against it? Or seems like they'd be against it. And we don't have any opinion on legalizing pot. Well, I mean, you know, AA in general, how do they feel it? We don't have any opinion. It's none of our business. We don't deal with anything to do with pot or other drugs or anything religious or political. And you can see them sort of close down. Okay, I'm going to go ask somebody that doesn't have their head up their ass. And because we don't. And I love the example that's given in the 12 and 12 of the Washingtonians, the Washington Temperance Movement. It started out pretty much the same as AA. It was a bunch of drunks trying to help each other stay sober. They knew they had to not drink at all. Very much like us, and they helped each other, and they got bringing other drunks in, and they started to grow like crazy. And within 4 years, they had 100,000 members. AA did not have 100,000 members in its first 4 years. They barely had a book, but before the Civil War, I think it was 1839 or something like that, they had 100,000 members in their first 4 years. Probably was later than 39. But at one point, Abraham Lincoln addressed a huge group of the Washingtonians, and they became very strong and very well respected. And what they did was got involved in other things. They got involved in two things. They got involved in prohibition of alcohol and abolition of slavery. And the prohibition of alcohol makes sense. They're a non-drinking organization. However, it was a controversial subject, just like it was when the prohibition passed here in the 1920s. In the mid-1800s, it was controversial, and it kind of divided them. The abolition of slavery was so controversial. I mean, obviously, the country went to war over it. And I love that it was the abolition of slavery that finally tore them down, because there's never been a more clear-cut moral issue in the history of the United States than whether a human can own another human. I mean, it's from our perspective today, it's so obvious, and you wonder why was ever a question. And yet, it was the question, it was the stance, the issue that tore the Washingtonians apart to the extent they were so wiped out that 100 years later, when Bill Wilson was basically starting a similar organization, somebody said, oh, this was kind of like the Washingtonians. And Bill Wilson said, I'm not familiar with that. What is that? And they started looking into it and found out what it was. And so this 10th tradition that Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issue and anything besides the recovery, the 12-step program as a recovery from alcoholism is an outside issue. Anything but that. And I think we're pretty good about that, actually. I think we're pretty good about not voicing an opinion as Alcoholics Anonymous. Traditions 11 and 12 both deal with anonymity. And somebody first really starting to take a serious look at the traditions and going, 11 and 12 are both, why do we have two traditions that deal with anonymity? And the first one is public anonymity. It's the anonymity that we usually think of protecting our personalities, our face and our name from the public eye as members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Obviously, there's a lot of people in AA whose faces and names are famous, And those people have to be careful not to identify themselves as Alcoholics Anonymous members. For a number of reasons. One, because we ask, and it's part of the deal here. And another is, if you become famous as a sober alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then you end up drinking or using or causing trouble or somebody gets hurt, it gives a black eye to Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know if any individual at this point can do so much damage that they actually damage Alcoholics Anonymous or our reputation. Bill Wilson said our reputation is actually better than our actual character, but I think that my friend Nancy was a singer in a group that was the first group to take the stage at Woodstock, and they were huge, and they shot up rocket to stardom, and then she had an accident. She was her voice was damaged, and the group was defunct. And so years later, after she was over 20 years sober, VH1 decided to do a movie on the group, on her life, and approached her, and she said, cool. And so they're going to do the story about her life and what she's doing now. And she was singing a little more, but she had been a college teacher and kind of came up through Alcoholics Anonymous. So when they first wrote the first script, it had her going to meetings of AA and putting her life back together. And she said, oops. Can't do that. We can't identify me as an AA member. And they said, well, yeah, but I mean, that's how you came back. And she said, yeah, but it is how I came back, but it's against our traditions. And she explained the tradition to them. And of course, they did what often happens in showbiz, saying, think of all the people you'll help when they see how you put your life back together through AA. And she said, that very well may be true, but regardless of the number of people who might be helped by it, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, and they asked me to be anonymous with my name and picture as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I have to adhere to that. And if you won't accept that, then there won't be a movie. And I told Nancy, that's what I like to think I would do. if they were going to make a movie about my life, that I'd like to take that stance, and maybe I would. You never know until it happens. But I'm proud of her that that's what she did, and so they finally took out all references to AA. They had one reference in there where a reporter says to her character at the end, "Well, how did you come up put your life back together?" She said, "One day at a time." And she was going to try to make them take that out, but her sponsor and everybody said, hey, it's a bumper sticker, you know, it's not going to hurt anything. So, but I was proud of her to take that stance, and that's the stance that we all should take, put in that position. Tradition 12, the anonymity that's mentioned in Tradition 12, is actually less anonymity in the sense that we think of it in Tradition 11, a public protection of our name and faces, as it is humility. I think it could actually be called humility. It could say humility is the spiritual foundation, because that's the kind of anonymity that it's talking about. The anonymity of an ant in an ant farm. We're just one among many. And in fact, in the long version, it says, and finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are to place principles before personality, and that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. Practice a genuine humility. This to the extent that our great blessings may never spoil us, and we shall live in grateful contemplation of He who presides over us all. So it's pretty clear that the anonymity that we're talking about in Tradition 12 is humility. And that actually, just like a clock, like 12 o'clock leads back to 1 o'clock, the kind of humility that we're supposed to practice in Tradition 12 leads us right back to Tradition 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. We have to be one among many and not try to stand out as special alcoholics. And there's such a temptation to do that sometimes, you know, when we get recognized as the secretary of our group, you know, or a speaker, or you know, the president of H&I or whatever, you know, to feel like a special kind of alcoholic. It's so important to just be a member. I don't know anything about humility, really. I've seen it a couple of times. I saw it once. The first time I really recognized humility, usually when we recognize it, it's gone, you know. Hey, I'm humble. Oh, no, I'm not. And I was traveling across the country. I went to my sister in Wichita to make some amends, actually, from L.A. to Wichita, and I made the amends. All I did was spend some time with her and her kids and rekindle our friendship that we had when we were kids. But on that trip, I was able to go across like 7 states and go to 15 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I came back, I was in Albuquerque, and I was just starting to go make the final drive to L.A., and I thought, you know, I've never seen the Grand Canyon. I thought, I'll go up to the Grand Canyon. So I started driving up to the Grand Canyon, and I was driving across. Northern Arizona is not a desert. I always thought Arizona was a desert. Northern Arizona is beautiful. And I was driving through and listening to Chuck Chamberlain and Indian Country. I'm thinking, it doesn't get any better than this. And I came across the canyon. I said, oh, my God, that's it. That's the Grand Canyon. And I stopped, and I took pictures of it, you know, and set the camera up on the car and go, here's Doug at the Grand Canyon, you know, here's Doug with his hat at the Grand Canyon. And I took all these pictures, and I stopped at the next station to get gas on the way up. And I called my wife, my wife's an artist, and she loves the desert. She would go out to the Grand Canyon and Rio Grande and the Painted Desert and Monument Valley and all this, take pictures and paint pictures. And so she knew this area really well. And I called her and I said, boy, I just saw the Grand Canyon. And she goes, oh, where are you? I said, well, I'm in Tuba City. And she said, oh, you haven't got to the Grand Canyon yet. I said, no, okay, you're in L.A. and I'm here. And I think I know the Grand Canyon when I saw it. It was huge. You know, it was really like big. You know, you could drop a freeway in it. She said, maybe I don't know where you are. I don't understand where you are. Then so I said, okay, well, then I'm right. And so I got in my car and I started driving. And I drew about another 35 miles and I came to the real Grand Canyon. And it's enormous. You know? It's shocking. It turns out Northern Arizona is laced with these huge canyons. And the biggest one is called the Grand Canyon because it's so grand. So I got out of my car and I went I went out on Lookout Point, and it's just sunset. Sun's just going down. And what an incredible, incredible, gorgeous view, you know. And I'm looking at this. Millions of years of erosions and earthquakes that created this canyon. You talk about God's time, you know. There was a honeymoon couple there, and they were talking about they'd been, you know, childhood sweethearts, and they just got married, and they're on their honeymoon. And I told them about my 5 years of sobriety, and I just went to make amends to my sister in Wichita, and we're standing here digging the Grand Canyon and the sunset on a weekday, just the three of us and 150 Japanese tourists. And I realized that I was experiencing humility. I was experiencing that this incredible, beautiful, gorgeous canyon that no matter how many pictures I took, I couldn't express it, was a scratch, one of many scratches on a planet that's a medium-sized planet in a medium-sized solar system, around a medium-sized sun, star, and a medium-sized galaxy in the universe in the mind of God, you know. I just got a sense of the hugeness of it and the smallness of myself. And yet, I didn't feel like I was separate from it. I felt like I was a part of it. And I got humility for that long. And I've experienced that at the international conventions at Seattle in 1990 and San Diego in 1995 and Minneapolis in 2000 and Toronto in 2005, and I'll feel it again, you know, in San Antonio in 2010, being a small, if not significant, important but not significant piece of something great. That's how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to take a question now. A question right here. At home and work? The question was, can I elaborate on the use of the traditions at home and work? Well, I kind of was joking earlier about not using the seventh tradition in business, and yet there it is. You know, I wouldn't want to own a business that was self-supporting through its own contributions, and yet I tell guys that I sponsor, go to work, give them a dime for their nickel, you know, and that means be self-supporting through your own contributions. If you're working for a company, use the third tradition. You know, you're working there because you're a member of that organization. You're part of it, and they're entitled to your work. Primary purpose, you know, is to Chuck C. said, give them doing for God's kids what they think they want done. You know, and a lot of times I want to tell somebody, I know you said you want it done this way, but I got a better way to do it. And if I'm not authorized to be in that position, the deal for me is to do it the way they tell me to do it. And that's my primary purpose there. And in family, you know, a family is a unit. My family is a unit, either with just my wife and I, or with my daughter, her family. We're family units. I don't have, I'm careful not to bring in an outside affiliation or express an opinion on outside issues when the issue is the family. My son-in-law and I have just delightful, heated political discussions. But when the issue is the family, when the issue is the raising of or the welfare of my grandsons, then that political thing is an outside issue. I mean, that's some examples. I don't know if that's what you're looking for. Did you want some other kind of example? Okay. Well, that's it. Now I'll think of a much better one when I lay my head down tonight. There was a question here, yeah. Well, clubhouses, as well as central offices, are not Alcoholics Anonymous. They're entities that are set aside, and it talks about that in the long form of the seventh tradition, that outside of their entities, such as clubhouses, it says, and hospitals, are set aside. They're not part of Alcoholics Anonymous. They serve Alcoholics Anonymous. And if there's some problem legally, or I've seen clubhouses, when they first started passing laws in California about not smoking indoors, I mean, they couldn't smoke in bars and everything. It's just amazing. But of course, there were people who had been smoking in AA clubhouses for years and started legal proceedings to continue smoking. And some of them were mildly successful temporarily. But what they did was drag Alcoholics Anonymous into the court, and the clubhouse is one thing. The clubhouse has licenses and pays taxes, etc. But they need to be set aside so that Alcoholics Anonymous can wash their hands of them anytime that we want. Because Alcoholics Anonymous really is ethereal. It's really not a thing. You know, we have a book that's a thing. We have a program that's ethereal. We have a fellowship that's certainly ethereal. We can take it any place, outside or inside. And we pay rent on the buildings because they're not ours. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't own. I know clubhouses that call themselves AA clubhouses. We all do. They're all over the country, all over the world. But they're really not Alcoholics Anonymous. They serve Alcoholics Anonymous and their members. But I think it's set out pretty clearly in the long form of the seventh tradition. Yeah, here. Well, In the sense that a lot of these sayings are just came out of nowhere. they just came out of nowhere. And I think the sense of that is regarding the 11th tradition. I don't know if this got on the tape. The question was, some groups say at the end of the meeting, what you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here. Do they? Well, I think it applies more to the 11th tradition. The question was that they summarized the 12th tradition in that way. I think, okay, here's opinion. I think it's because they don't understand the 12th tradition. You know? Yeah. Do that. And give them my number, 818-353-4607. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he said we're not supposed to carry stories out of meetings, but if we do, we have to be certainly not attach names to it. We can't. It's a clear violation of the 11th tradition to say, oh yeah, I saw my banker was in, even if you don't mention his name, my bank president was in a meeting and he said he almost went to jail for embezzlement. that's not a good thing. I don't think the bank president would appreciate you doing, or I saw my son's teacher at school and she was talking about all the men that she slept with, when she was loaded. Not a good idea. So I mean that's pretty clear. That's 11th tradition. That's protecting our anonymity in the classic sense. But I personally don't think it applies to the 12th tradition of humility, of being one among many, a worker among workers. Yeah. Well, that's 3 and 5. If you have an AA meeting in a treatment center, you have to adhere to the rules of the treatment center. But your AA meeting is AA. Your AA meeting is AA, regardless. Just like the church, a synagogue may want you to convert to Judaism. A Christian church may want you to pick up the cross, and a lot of times they'll suggest that. We say, thank you, we're just here to stop drinking. You have to adhere. Sometimes I've seen meetings have to leave someplace because the rules at the venue are too stringent. One church that I know of, they thought that the meeting should help them work in the garden. They had all the members of the church came and worked in the garden on Saturday, and it was nice, and members could, but they wanted us to make a commitment, and we couldn't because it was an outside issue. It was a clear affiliation with the church, and they didn't understand that. But as long as the rules of the treatment center don't prevent you from practicing the traditions within your meeting, it doesn't seem like it should be a conflict. It may be that the treatment center says you have to include heroin in your talk, and then they're telling you what you can do with Alcoholics Anonymous, and they can't do that. Well, we can't adhere to that. But as a group, you could, using the 4th tradition. Thank you. Well, the question was, doesn't the seven tradition indicate...
I'm just going to interrupt you, though. There's like 5 minutes left on the tape, so feel free to keep going.
Okay. All right. Well, the tape's going to end like right now, so I want to thank you for... that doesn't mean we can still stay here, but... if anybody's listening to this tape, you're probably going to miss like the best question coming up, but